Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sam, like, where are your tickets tonight?
Oh.
Are they good?
There we go.
Not Come sure on. Yet.
Seated toilet
Oh, but
seat
I mean, you,
got
NBC, you have to have NBC yeah. seats.
The bench?
Not sure yet.
So you could be next to Pierre. You could be on the ice.
Yes. We're not sure yet.
Yeah,
he's lying.
He's totally
100% lying.
You have Saliza's seats.
They are right in front.
Are we going to see you on television
Hand
in
out.
Your seats?
No. No, I don't ever want to be on television if I'm not on
television.
That's the opposite of me.
No, I want to go enjoy it. Yes, exactly.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, then. We're live at Chatter. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street Northwest, where we are open for breakfast when we do this show. Gary Braun is here. Liz Clark, who I saw last week at Marty Aronoff's birthday party.
Elizabeth Clark.
I said, why aren't you on? She says, I have nothing to contribute. I said, would you please, please come on the show? Michael Kornheiser's here. Nigel is here to run the board and do the news. And for the second day, our intern Marcus remains with us.
He's back.
I don't know Marcus's last name, but I have found
Aurelius.
Out. I have found out from Rob Stronach, who tweeted early this morning, or like texted me. Texted me. Rob Stronach showed me, by the way, that Bryce Harper was in the building last night in a Vegas shirt. Good for him.
Yeah, sure.
Good for him.
It was a day
That's
off.
His team. And Rob said that Marcus, our intern, is at Syracuse University. That's the Newhouse School, I believe,
correct.
Where he's studying, among
Robert
other things,
Newhouse.
Sports broadcasting. So we'll put him on the air at some point, and if he gags, that's the end of his career. No, we're not going to put him on right now. We're going to start the show, obviously, with the Washington Capitals. I don't know how many times I have to say this. They're going to win the Stanley
I believe
Cup.
You had that.
They're going to sweep this. They're going to win four in a row. I hope it goes a little bit longer, only because people come in here and drink and eat,
right.
Which makes me happy. And we will be open for the Caps game on Thursday night. That is the next game. That is a clinching, potentially clinching game. The Caps could win 4-1. The Caps went four in a row over Columbus. They did not go four in a row over Pittsburgh. But they beat Pittsburgh, and they beat them in Pittsburgh for the clincher. They beat Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay. And the reason they're going to win this is because the one person they have got to go through that's left is Marc-Andre Fleury, who was not with the Penguins, and they're going to go through him.
Yeah.
They're going to go through him. You were on the tweet chain last night thinking they should have yanked him early.
I think Michael shares the sentiment. That last goal of the third period, dude, he looked rattled.
He's won cups.
I get it, but I mean, look what they did with the guy here who's about to win a cup. I mean,
that's
a weird position.
Yeah. That position can change an entire series.
And by the way, it can change in a period of play.
100%.
I mean, that dude could 100%. Stand on his head Thursday night,
that's
and,
right.
then,
that's
and
right.
then we're back to, you know.
That's right. Vegas, you know, Caps got lucky last night a few times. Vegas hit the post a few times.
Yeah.
It looked like it was sponsored by the Washington Post, if you don't get it.
Very nice.
Yeah. Don't
How about
get
that?
It.
Well done.
There are two numbers that are important to know. One is that the last 31 teams to go up 3-1 in the final have won the cup. The last 31.
Wow.
That's not a small sample size.
I think it's 32-1 all time.
That's not. It goes back. The last time it didn't happen was in 1940s or something like that. And if you score three or more against Vegas, you win. You win. Mm-hmm. So here's my assessment of this. It's pretty simple, actually. Vegas, and they're a very good team. You cannot go through the entire regular season and get all the way to the Stanley Cup without being very good. But in times of crisis, and I'm not going to say that the Caps in times of crisis are brilliant, because the history would say that's not true. But in times of crisis, you need a team ethic to fall back on. You need to say, remember when we lost three in a row 4 years ago?
Scar tissue.
They don't. Yeah. They just started. Everything is new. Winning eight in a row is completely new to them. Losing three in a row is completely new. They just started. They don't have that. The people who were on this team were all on other teams last year. They were substitutes on other teams last year. So as great as their season has been, they can't sit there and say, okay, we got this and here's why. Like other teams can do that. Even the Capitals, to some degree, can look back in their own history as a collective unit and say, well, when this happened, we did X. Vegas
that's
cannot,
a great point.
They just can't do it. And that's one of the reasons I think they're going to lose. The Capitals are scoring early. Oshie, that was a great goal. That's halfway through the first period. Beautiful. And then boom. And then by the end of the first period, it's 3-0, and that's it.
Game's over.
That's, I mean, I think it's game over. Sands said that if they win on Thursday night, it will be 40 years to the day.
Incredible.
40 years to the day that the Bullets won the NBA championship.
Wow.
Now, there's Sands, as a lifelong resident, is treating his kids terribly, forcing them to be Washington fans.
Does seem a bit cruel. But
he's probably appreciative this morning.
Yeah, yeah. But he has suffered. Gary, lifelong resident, has understood suffering. Michael, young, you don't remember any.
Yeah, Michael,
any wins.
I don't feel like I've suffered.
Had Super
I mean,
Bowl
the
wins.
Redskins were dominant in my late teens, early 20s. Yeah.
I can't remember those Super Bowls. All I can remember is you're leaving town for those.
Yes.
So which, it was, well, so that's it was kind of a win for you.
I said I was leaving for those. I just left.
Small win.
Nice.
Yeah, but I mean, his, what are you, 30, 31?
32.
Yeah, like that. That's all they've known. I mean, this is if this happens, it'll be what's it been 26 and a half years, right?
January of 1992.
Yeah,
they won
Super
the Super Bowl. Now it people say, oh, it's not the longest drought of a team of a city with the four major teams. Minneapolis is slightly longer because Minneapolis, the Twins, won the World Series in 91.
That's right.
In the fall, in October of 1991, the Redskins won. In January of 1992.
Right.
So that's a little bit longer, but
Minneapolis had Prince though.
Yes,
this is true.
That's true.
Yes. Well, we don't have anybody quite
well,
like
we had
that.
Jack Brown.
Well, he's not quite like Prince.
I'm sorry.
So your thoughts. Your thoughts. Yes, you.
Mine?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what
no,
do you think?
No, I think it's tremendous. The shots. So I watched from my sofa. I don't have Sands quality tickets, nor did I have a
hot
heated
seat.
Toilet.
You didn't
yes.
have hot seat.
So I watched with the Beagle from my couch, and the shots from the street of the throng in the street just blew my mind. I mean, I don't have
that in Toronto.
To that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. In this town.
And Vegas.
Now you were there physically. You were in the
well,
street.
Well, I watched the game from. Literally the best seat in the house, my couch. But prior to the
couch.
Game,
right.
yes,
right.
my couch.
Right.
But prior to the game, I did. Spike unfortunately was sick and under the weather. But I grabbed Ike and Sydney, and said, "We're going down there. I mean, you don't know when this is going to happen
cool.
again." And I, you know, Dad likes a party a little bit. They understand and appreciate that. So we went down. It was an easy sell because Sydney's a huge Fall Out Boy fan, and they were playing a free concert down there. And it was crazy.
The other day they had a concert with Sting somebody.
And Shaggy.
Was it actually Sting?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Sting and Shaggy who just
Gordon
released
Sumner
something.
Sting?
Yes.
So they record these about an hour and a half, 2 hours before
right,
the puck
6
drops,
o'clock.
Right.
And then they pipe in, you know, a 3 to 5 minute clip that they play before the game starts.
Uh-huh. So it was the actual Sting.
Yes.
And
yes.
Shaggy.
He just released this collaboration with Shaggy. They did an album together, so
they
were there
promoting. Ah.
Fall Out Boy similarly is on tour.
Probably the Killers.
Oh, that's right. They don't have
Oh, Thursday in Vegas, you mean. I thought you meant Sunday, game six.
Game six, but
hopefully no one.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Hopefully they'll do nothing. So, Michael and I were talking about this before we went on. I mean, it's just not a scene you're used to seeing around here. Right. It was really cool. It was really young. I mean, we talked about this early in the series.
Did you see Doug Kammerer in his
Capitals
shirt?
I did not. Nor did I see Leon, although I saw Leon after the
great.
Game.
Leon looked great on TV wearing a red polo shirt.
Kammerer was sampling every tasty treat from the 400 level of that arena.
Kammerer looked like a fanboy.
On the 11 o'clock news, Kammerer was trolling for tickets and a Vegas trip worse than I was. I almost felt embarrassed for him. Yeah, he was trying to get out there. So... we were down there, had a great time. It was.
They don't need him in Vegas because it's hot and sunny.
This is true.
Like that's what it is in the summer. It's hot and sunny.
I think the outside shots from just outside the arena show the evolution of the fan base for this team. Shows that this team is ready to win. If you look at the reaction, this is not what you typically see from DC, which has been accused of being a poor sports town.
By Wilbon, not by anybody else.
But
by Wilbon.
This is what people would have done in the early 90s for the Washington football team. People are getting out. They are mobilized.
It's good.
And I think a larger picture, even if some people think the games are not that exciting late based on the Caps' recent play, you are seeing a series with two teams who are not historical, perennial Stanley Cup final stalwarts. You are seeing a more inclusive hockey sport that is opening up to a wider fan base. It'll be interesting to see the effects of this in 3 to 5 years. And I think some of that even comes down to, you mentioned the 3-0 lead. The guy who scores that third goal, Smith Pelly, that's a look you don't normally see in a hockey game. And he's had two big goals in the last 2 games.
I don't know that that's true. I mean, certainly P.K. Subban is one of the great stars. Jerome McGinley was one of the greats.
I'm talking about just casual hockey fans where you have...
Well, this brings up an interesting point because he's a black hockey player.
Yes.
There are not that many. Many years ago, before what was the Capitol Center was built, Bob Johnson, who owned at the time BET, I guess he still owns BET, he wanted to buy the Bullets and the Capitals.
Really?
And I sat at a luncheon with him at the Washington Post and heard him say, "We're going to make the Capitals Black America's hockey team." And everybody at the table went, "Whoa, this is a pretty good idea."
Yeah.
If you could do that. And I think you do. Maybe this is just the crowd shot that television stations want to put on. But it does seem to me that the Washington Capitals have attracted a mixed audience more so than a lot of cities do. Seems that way to me. Is that what you're suggesting, Michael?
I think what you're noticing is the outside arena experience. My personal experience from inside is that it's still the same very white.
Well,
very,
season tickets.
Yes.
You buy your ticket, you hold your ticket.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's great that you're seeing that outside shot. You still have many barriers inside, and you still have a lot of practices that happen in the arena that might make certain fans feel unwelcome. But I do think that when you see these games, and again, it's about opening it up to the non-season ticket holder, I think these games do mean something.
Well, Washington, D.C. is our most international city in the country, obviously. And so it stands to reason that Washington, D.C., if a team does well and people want to gather and attach themselves to a team that's doing well, the look of those people will reflect an international city more than most cities in this country, which is a very healthy sign, if indeed that's true. I hadn't thought about it much. I'm just thinking about the fact that I think they're going to win. Well, and I'm wondering what the parade is going to be like.
20,000 there last night.
It's great.
18 attended the game, 20,000 outside.
Let's get them in chatter.
Right.
Wow.
So that's what I mean. We're selling stuff here. I mean, I don't think they should go
flag.
I don't think they should go building a 40,000 seat hockey arena.
No, that would be a joke.
But the people
This is the winning that creates the maelstrom that is the winning.
I mean, it creates fans by the generate. Look, there's a reason why people like me at 48 still think somewhere in the deep recesses of my brain that the Redskins are any good. It's because when I was formative, they were.
Yeah.
And I think for my kids' generation, not that the Caps are going to go to cup after cup after cup, but they'll certainly remember this experience. And as long as that team stays competitive as they've been historically, I mean, you're going to make a generation of fans. I think if you're Ted Leonsis, you have to be thrilled with how this whole
thing
is.
And by the way, in one of the great sort of cross-promotional things from sport to sport, because you have seen the Nats really support the Capitals. Davey Martinez wears a Capitals hat, a Capitals jersey at press conferences and things like that. And they had Max Scherzer and Ryan Zimmerman last night leading the cheers.
Yeah.
That's why it's completely fine for Bryce Harper, who is from Las Vegas, to wear a Las Vegas jersey. That's his team. It just started.
Yeah.
It's the only team he's ever had in Las Vegas. So that's good. And Scherzer and Zimmerman, I hope Zimmerman didn't hurt himself further.
He was wearing a helmet. He's okay.
I hope he didn't
tear
a pec muscle or something like that and be on the DL for the next 6 years. But Scherzer, he's insane. Is Scherzer not the most fun of any athlete
He is raging, too, when he's doing his Let's Go Caps thing.
He looked like he was ready to take the ice.
Pumping his hands in the air, screaming.
I would imagine he could go out on the ice.
Right.
I would imagine that, with or without skates.
Right,
I don't think it would matter. I think his favorite cap would be Tom Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I think Scherzer would want to hit somebody.
Yeah.
Scherzer's a pretty big boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty big boy.
And he's fired up. So whatever happens at this point, I think it's safe to say it's going to be spectacular.
Because
if they blow a 3-1, oh, no, you can't even know.
Oof.
I'm not going there yet.
Franchise moves?
Not going there yet.
I think as Jeff the Dude tweeted at me last night, Charlie Brown
Jeff
is about
dude?
Jeff the Dude was his handle, and he simply tweeted, "Charlie Brown is about to kick the hell out of the football." I think that's what's happening here.
All right, as I said, Thursday night right here at Chatter for Game 6. Barry's Verlugo. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ZipRecruiter ad, and this has been written recently.
Yes.
I have not seen this before. I'm going to read this copy. This year's hockey finals have been full of drama, amazing saves, quality goals, huge hits, and 11th-hour heroics. Every game has been a nail-biter to the end, which has been great for fans. Well, that's not true, but it's a nice copy. It's just not. Last night was not a nail-biter to the end. But there are times when you don't want drama, like when you're hiring. You want hiring to go as smoothly as winning a series in four. And that's what you get when you hire with ZipRecruiter. They're the smartest way to hire and the official hiring partner of your Washington Capitals, which I didn't know. ZipRecruiter, I'd like to get my own hiring partner.
It'd be like nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. ZipRecruiter's hiring process is smooth and easy, like new ice after a Zamboni run. One click posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. Then their powerful matching technology scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply. It's so effective that 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Just imagine if the Caps scored on 80% of their shots. Well, nobody would beat them, would they? And as a Caps fan, you can try ZipRecruiter now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GoCaps. Wow. That's ZipRecruiter.com/GoCaps. Hired like a champion with ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from Dr. Mark Teachin, who's the chaplain of the Stony Brook School. No, not that Stony Brook. And he writes, a little more than a year ago, you played a song from the debut album East of my band, Sils Maria. Sils Maria's drummer, Nate DeMauro, is an avid Celtics fan and has written a few songs about his boyhood heroes like Larry Bird and Bob Cousy. For what it's worth, Nate teaches English at our boarding school, coaches two sports, and drives the bus, of course, Michael, and plays every instrument you hear on the attached track. With his permission, I humbly submit Larry Legend. Pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
It's pretty for a tune.
This is really nice. It's really nice. Our music is just fabulous.
It is.
It plays in Barry's Verlugo, who was at the game last night, who will be at what I think is the last game of the series, game five, because I've said for a while I thought they would win four in a row after they won one. Where are we now? Where are we now with the way you look at this team and what's going to happen?
Uncharted territory, kind of, you know, a brave new world that I think a lot of people who follow this team, specifically in sports in this town broadly, wondered whether you could get to again. I mean, it's not – okay, it is that they are – one win away from winning the Stanley Cup. But I think it's also that in getting to that position and knowing that this is a franchise that has blown 5-3 games to 1 lead in the past, that somehow doesn't matter now. That they have, in getting to this position, kind of stripped away all the pessimism and anxiety and worry and flipped it to a place where you're like, you know what, they're the better team in the series.
They've
been the better team throughout this playoffs, and it's not going to be one of those things where they have 40 shots and the other team has 20 and they lose anyway. It's going to be, you know, they play how they play, they dictate the pace and the structure and everything about the game. And if they don't win on Thursday, they'll probably win on Sunday. I just feel like all the emotional turmoil that this team and this town is normally dragged through is kind of at least put on pause and turned into a position that we're certainly not accustomed to.
Here's the one observation that I had that I'll claim as my own. I don't know if you will agree with it. You get in a position like this, people say of Vegas, well, they hadn't lost two in a row all year, and now three. Well, they hadn't lost three in a row all year. Well, they don't have a collective history. They were just formed this year. Everybody on this team played on other teams last year. So they can't sit in a locker room and say, remember when we lost three in a row 2 years ago and we did this? They don't have that. They are not, you don't have to fear them because they just came together and they have no ethic to fall back on. And this is why I believe even the Capitals, for all their losing, can remember pulling themselves out of certain slides. These people, they don't have anything like that. I don't fear them at all. If I were a Cap, I would not fear them at all.
I don't disagree with that at all. And I think, you know, when you step back and you just look at the other side of the coin, what Vegas has done, even if they get blown out to, Thursday night.
Amazing. It's amazing.
One of the most remarkable. Yes, absolutely. I mean, they're an expansion franchise that blew through the Western Conference playoffs at 12-3, I guess it was, and then 13-3 when they won game one of the finals. And I feel like the other side of the coin is they're out of gas. The fairy dust has kind of gone away, and what you're left with is an extremely admirable run that is about to come to a close, because in this situation, the Capitals are the more experienced team, yeah, the team that has been together the longest. And another way that this has kind of flipped on its head is that we've always talked about the Capitals' past being a negative, and now I think it's a positive. And it took, maybe it just took pushing through Pittsburgh that one time to get it to where you thought, now they can do anything. That was the hurdle. And Tony, we talked about it at the time. Like, I mean, whatever. Caps fans would take whatever path to a cup you could get to. But if they do it, and it's July or it's October, and that run to a cup includes vanquishing the Penguins, it makes it better. The story is better. And I think it matters. It mattered that they won that series and how they handled the next two.
I agree.
It's just an amazing position to be in.
So you have not been in Washington all that long. You were certainly not here for any of the glorious Redskin years. You've seen Game 6 against Boston. Sadly, you also saw Game 7 against Boston. You've seen the Nats have great triumphs in the playoffs, but never, ever get through even the first round. When you go to these Caps games, this particular run, is it unlike anything you have seen as a sports writer here, or is there something comparable?
No, I mean, and I might be the outlier here, and maybe I'm in a pocket that is smaller than I think. The only thing, this is different, but I think the only thing that kind of compares in a way is April 14th, 2005, the night baseball returned. And that doesn't have anything to do with winning anything. It's only that night there were grown men who were natives here and had been without their favorite sport for 33 years, and it came back. Now, again, that's not winning a championship.
Right.
I think last night in particular, because, excuse me, it felt like the crowd outside was even bigger than it was on Saturday night, which I didn't think was possible, because I figured Saturday night would be like, well, everybody gets to hang around during the day, and you can be downtown, and you can go out. I'm surprised that the watch parties at Capital One Arena, when the team has been on the road, have been as big as they have been. I'm certainly surprised that the watch parties outside the arena for people who do not have tickets on a Monday night go out and spend their time together and celebrate together. That is something I knew what it would be like in the arena to a certain extent, because it's almost always good in there. They've had 400 something straight sellouts, but it's a big deal, and I do think, you know, whatever, these teams can say they're separate from each other and they have nothing to do with each other. But Max Scherzer and Ryan Zimmerman,
fabulous, fabulous.
They've led the cheer, and that there's connective tissue there. And I know that there are people with different organizations in this town that want the other organizations to break through because they do feel like there's some sort of barrier with the fans, not with the way the team is constructed or like what trades they should make or anything like that, but an angst and anxiety barrier with the fans that if you broke through it for one, it might be broken through for a bunch of them, and that could change the environment in, you know, whatever stadium or ballpark that is in the postseason to come.
So I'm thinking, and I thought about this yesterday when I saw his wife, I'm thinking of Bernie Wolf, who was the first goalie ever for the Washington Capitals. And he's a guy that I play golf with, and I know him, and I like him very much. And he stayed close to hockey. He's done some agent work and stuff like that. And he lives here, mm-hmm. and he's been going to the game. So that was in 1975, 76, 74. So Bernie was the first. So it would be the people, the Caps have never won anything. They've not. And there is a whole lot of people that went through those doors who I assume would feel very, very good if the Caps won. Do you have, like, do you have any sense of the sort of history of it and what that would mean? It's a different owner, you know, and all of that. But I'm wondering if you pick any of that up, do people in the organization, do they talk about prior Caps players? Have they been around? Has Rod Langway or Juno, have they been around? Bondra, have they been around?
So, yeah, I mean, I saw Peter Bondra getting on the elevator. I think it would have been before game three.
Cool.
Those guys are around, and they're embraced. Ole Kolzig is, I mean, he's not as far back as those guys. He's with the organization. The sense I get in terms of that kind of deeper history is more in emails from season ticket holders who were season ticket holders in 1974, 75.
Wow.
And you know, people, not to overgeneralize, Tony, but people of that age can write some long emails, right?
So, yes, we get them. We write them.
Yeah. So you hear stories of, you know, I took my kids out to Cap Center, and it was kind of a pain to get there. And I really have heard stories about, you know, this isn't dating back to the early 1900s, but there are people who have these memories of going out there, having this new hockey team as something to root for. And even though they were really terrible in those early years, they have these memories of bringing their family, in many cases, to this suburban rink in Landover. And there's a lot of, you know, formative, important times for people with bad hockey. So those are the people who I think are most emotional and probably most disbelieving about it. I do think there's, you know, you mentioned I hadn't been here for the Redskins Super Bowl wins, and that's certainly true. So I feel like, and that's also true for any, you know, 18 to 25-year-old.
That's right.
Who is from here and who's been here their whole life and has only heard stories about what can happen. What is John Riggins to a 25-year-old Washingtonian? He's a figment. He's a legend. He's something that you see on film that to them in an HD world must seem grainy and outdated. Now, you know, you're building a data point that, wow, maybe this can happen in my lifetime. And, you know, at some level, it doesn't matter what sport it is for those people. It has to happen somewhere, and this team certainly feels like the team that's going to do it.
So this is the most interesting thing to me, because if the Capitals win, surely if Alex Ovechkin is not the most valuable player in the series, he will be regarded as having achieved something greater than anything else he has ever achieved. In each of the last 3 years when the Capitals have lost, there have been public debates as to trade Alexander Ovechkin. Wilbon has gotten on television year after year after year and said, I would get rid of him right now. I always said I would keep him, but I would have kept him for economic reasons because I think he's the guy that people want to see more than anyone else. I don't know what side of this you were on, but I'm sure you had to weigh in on this in the last couple of years. And here is Ovechkin now universally in this area being celebrated. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean,
I certainly, at the end of last season, when they lost in Game 7 to Pittsburgh, and it felt like, you know, the same movie we've watched over and over again, yes, you have to insert yourself into that public debate.
Yep.
And I think that there was an argument, and it was a reported-out argument, that Ovechkin was not the leader that you would typically think of the mainstay of the franchise as being, that that the one thing that all of these disappointments dating back to the first playoff run in 08 with this guy had basically him in common, and that they had, in fact, when they needed leadership or when they got to the trade deadline with other good teams, one of the things that they were looking for in trades was leadership, because
mm-hmm. That's right.
They didn't feel like they had it in-house. So I think those are all fair, and that doesn't change what the circumstances were in the spring of 2017. What changed is Alex Ovechkin, and you cannot overstate his buy-in, both from an emotional standpoint and just in the way that he is playing hockey. It's extraordinary to watch a guy who is the best goal scorer of his time and an instant, the second he retires, Hall of Famer, get down and block shots the way that he is doing this. He has changed. And again, I don't want to make too much of the Pittsburgh thing, but I'm going to make too much of the Pittsburgh thing. I kind of feel like he got through that series and that nemesis and for once was able to say, okay, I got Crosby. And
yeah.
Whether it was because of him or not, that was important. And then it's almost like he woke up the next day and realized, oh, wait, we didn't just beat Pittsburgh. This means we could win the whole thing. And he has just been extraordinary in every way. He is the emotional kind of linchpin for the whole thing. And you're right, Tony. We're watching a guy's legacy, both locally and nationally and internationally, changed, because if he wins a cup, then there's no, yeah, Ovechkin was the greatest goal scorer of his generation, but the but goes away, and he's a complete legend at that point.
I agree. He's not Crosby. Crosby has better statistics,
no.
But he's closer. He's closer than he ever was, and that's a big deal. Thank you, Barry. Enjoy Vegas.
I will. I appreciate it, Tony.
Good. Barry's for Luga, boys and girls, whose commentary can be read in the Washington Post often and is always great. We will take a break. When we come back, we will do the news. Lots of news. Liz, ready to talk about the news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's Razors ad, and it always asks, what do you love most about shaving with Harry's? And I always say, love is really too strong. I like it. I like their product. I use their product. I'm happy to have their product. Love is too strong. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they created a trial offer, and you can claim yours by going to harrys.com/TonyK. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. So they overpaid for a factory. I don't know if they overpaid. It's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than a leading brand, $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days. They'll give you a free refund. Here is the trial offer. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. It's a weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel that I add parenthetically smells very nice, and a travel blade cover. And listeners to this high-quality podcast can redeem their trial set by going to Harry's, HARRYS.com/TonyK. Make sure you go to Harry's.com/TonyK to redeem your offer. And it says to let them know that I sent you to help support the show. You really don't have to let them know. It's like not required. It's good. It's, as the kids say, it's all good.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from Sully from Boston, who writes, miscast. was a geek rock duo from Boston. I mean, I guess we still are. We aren't dead. We just don't get together with instruments anymore. Please find an MP3 copy of our song, That's What She Said, attached. Feel free to use it on the podcast in a chatter jukebox, or if you so desire, I could burn a CD for your disc man. Jay Hansen is the brains of the operation, doing all the writing, recording, and instrument playing. Sully from Boston simply sang. Fans of The Office will hopefully appreciate what we'd like to think. This is Michael Scott's favorite song, if Michael Scott has a favorite song. You can find more of this music at miscastmusic.com. We play these songs in their entirety at the end of the podcast, and proud and happy to do so. Michael, if people like Sully from Boston want to send in the music they've made, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonycornizershow.com or bring in that mix CD tape so that I can use it in his Walkman.
Yeah, that would be great. I tend, when I'm on a train, I tend to listen to the Disc Man.
Oh.
You know, I am man. The Disc Man. Michael, are we selling anything else today?
Yeah, we still have the Bootsy One promo code. Go ahead and check
Father's
out
Father's Day, baby.
Some of their shorts, the Wyatt short, the Neil short are ready.
I want to get some stuff from Johnny O.
So the problem is I get a catalog, yeah, and then I offer to show you the online catalog,
like,
and you
online
say no.
I want to touch it. I want to touch the pages.
It's the paper.
I want the paper. That's how I like to buy things.
Thin,
I mean, I know
print
that,
smell
that this
it
is ending. You know,
yes.
Yes, America, sadly. Look, I look around at television.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's my age on it. Nobody. So I get it. I'm being phased out. It's okay. I had a pretty good run.
Yes, you
it's
did.
It's okay. I had a pretty good run.
Yes, you did.
Nigel, you have news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. The play was called Sprint Right Option. Joe Montana took the snap and rolled to his right before floating a pass to the end of the end zone. And Dwight Clark,
all 6'5 of them.
Yes, reached up.
So Dwight Clark, height was very important.
Yeah, didn't jump up, just reached up and grabbed it, as I recall.
Yeah.
And that led to the Niners beating the Cowboys 28-27 in the NFC Championship game. They went on to win that Super Bowl against the Bengals. And yesterday, the man who caught that pass, Dwight Clark, passed away at the age of 61.
Lou Gehrig's disease. Terrible. It's terrible. And there's nothing else you can say.
Too young, yeah.
It's terrible disease, and he was a great player. Great player. Montana to Clark, that's one of the big ones. Montana to Clark, Montana to Rice, Young to Rice. I mean, that's the San Francisco grouping of passing, you know, that Brady has. Well, Brady has with like 8 or 9 guys, but mostly Gronkowski now at this point,
right,
I would say. Dwight Clark.
And we
young
talked about this before the show in terms of iconic moments in the National Football League.
No, it's in the top 10.
Yeah, it has to be, right?
I mean, for some people, it's one.
I mean,
but
well,
it's certainly in the top 10.
In terms of the play itself, but I'm not sure that there's a play that launched the trajectory of more careers than that play.
I mean, it changed the course of, Bill Walsh, the West Coast offense.
Right. All of it.
The legend,
all of it,
Montana.
All of it. Yeah, yeah, San Francisco. And they ended up winning four.
Four in the 80s and then one more
and then
in the 90s.
More, and yes, one more. And a lot of those people were around for many of them, if not all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are, I guess you could argue, the Steelers.
Yeah.
The Steelers 4 in 6 years. I would argue San Francisco's 5 in 9 or 10.
Right.
Yeah, I'd argue that.
Staying with football, it appears as if the Eagles will not be attending a ceremony at the White House.
This is, yes. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I guess the president, when he saw that not a lot of people were going to attend from the team, and there had been some comments from some of the players about, you know, not wanting to go associate with the president.
Yeah, that's, and which is
which
fair.
Is their right.
Yeah,
he said, you know what, we're not going to have the ceremony. They said they're not going to try and have a ceremony with 1,000 fans we're supposed to attend anyways. But he wrapped himself in the national anthem and said, we will not do this with players who continue to disrespect the anthem and the military here in the country.
The Eagles have behaved very well with this.
I don't believe the Eagles had a single kneeler, by the way.
They did not. They did not. Nobody knelt on the sideline of Philadelphia Eagles. Now, they have people who were very outspoken about what is wrong with policies in America that lead to people being harassed and shot and even dead as a result of their skin more than anything else. But they didn't have any kneelers.
They also had a player donate his entire
Chris Long, Howie Long's son,
to charity.
Yeah,
and others do.
And their success is something that was a long time coming in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. If you think Washington waited a long time, Philadelphia waited a long time. Certainly the Eagles waited a long time. In this particular case, they are disinvited. The news story in the paper says that as many as 50 or 60 Eagles would have come, people affiliated with the team, but a lot of players wouldn't. Now, this is not the first time this has happened with this administration, because the Golden State Warriors were disinvited, similarly because there had been some public criticism of the Trump administration. But there were people who didn't come to see Obama. But this isn't the first time.
Right. Right.
There are athletes, for their own reasons, that say, I don't like that guy, and I'm not going. Sure. I'm not going. Tim Thomas,
that's right,
the goalie of the Boston Bruins,
that's right,
said, you know, and you know what? That's okay. That's your right. This is the larger issue here is the anthem issue, which go ahead, Liz. Do you want to talk?
I'm sorry.
No, go.
No, I don't think it's the anthem issue. Okay. And maybe we're having a difference of words. But I find this so appalling. I mean, surely there are more important issues related to this presidency, whether it's, you know, the degradation of the environment, the preposterous notion that he's above the law and has supreme, you know, authority, the fraying of allies around the world. I mean, these are very, very weighty issues. But this is just an absurd, churlish, petulant act that underscores what's increasingly obvious, that he has zero understanding that he's a caretaker of the White House, and that the president's role is to unify the country when those moments arise, whether that's celebrating the arts. I believe he took himself out of the Kennedy Center honors, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Whether that's leading the country in mourning in times of crisis, which consistently he's been a divisive force. And, you know, not just a total abdication of that role, and then a perception that every single event is about him. It's about his ego. It's like he's the sun king of our century. Everything revolves around him. And it's just the office of the presidency is diminished. The White House is diminished. We're all diminished by it. It's trivial in this, it's a small bore, you know, in the scope of real problems, but it's just such a sad and ridiculous third grade act. And it's just taking this corrosive toll, at least for me. I mean, I'm just without words.
I didn't mean to say that the national anthem issue was a bigger issue than this thing. I do think, though, that the whole national anthem issue is something that roils.
Yeah,
a lot
no,
of
my
people.
Squawking about that at you was that this is not about the anthem.
No, this is not.
Right. I mean, and that's not what I'm saying. I think we're parsing words, but to him it is. This is so preposterously not about the anthem. It's one issue that he feels he's won on because the NFL owners capitulated with this policy recently. So he's going to keep winning on this issue, even when the issue is not in play. This has nothing to do with
no,
the anthem.
No, I mean, it really doesn't. But it's something, we go back to this because the NFL's policy is so stupid.
Yes.
Their new policy is even stupider than their old policy.
Yes.
And the only way that they should have been attacking this is meeting with the players and saying, what can we do for you and what can you do for us? Because it's just this is just bad.
Shows of allegiance are not required in this country.
No, you don't have to.
And the association of,
and by the way, when the actual games start, nobody really cares.
Right.
Because they want to get a bet down on the game. They want to watch the game. And people play during the games.
And
they play. They
during
hard.
The allegiance, a stunning proportion of fans are paying no attention.
Not buying hot dogs and beers.
You know,
and
anybody
chatting.
Who's been to any sporting
event. Well, compromise also decreasingly evident in it,
no
to
compromise.
Your point, as well as politically. I mean, like,
no compromise.
Right. Like,
no,
the,
no.
Like the NFL
no
thing.
Total
was,
capitulation.
Yeah. No compromise.
There was one plan I heard that instead of the anthem, they were going to play She's About to Move Her by Sir Douglas.
I like that.
Yeah.
Doug song.
I thought you were going to say She's the One.
That's something we could all have gotten behind.
That would be good.
Yes.
What else we got?
From one president to another, Bill Clinton had an interview yesterday on the
that?
Today Show. He was out
promoting
a new book that he co-wrote with James Patterson.
What is that?
It's a new novel called The President Is Missing.
He's written a novel?
Yes.
With James Patterson, yes.
Really?
That's right.
Was that like what I want to do on summer vacation? I want to write a novel?
I don't know, but at one point they're in New Orleans and they have your character there at a hotel desk.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
But in the course of that interview with Craig Melvin on the Today Show, obviously they talked about, well, not obviously, but they did talk about the Me Too movement and his thing with Monica Lewinsky, and asked him if he would have done anything different. And he came out and he said, no, I don't think I would have. If the facts were the same today, I wouldn't have done anything different. And he went on to say, look, I've apologized profusely. He hasn't apologized to her face-to-face to Miss Lewinsky, but has apologized.
This is a very difficult issue still for me. Monica Lewinsky was a very willing participant in this. Much younger, should never have happened, but was very willing. And has never said anything else. Has never said anything else but that she was a willing participant in it. Her life, seems to me, is close to being ruined. And she stood up, I think, fairly bravely and publicly and dealt with it and in, I think, an admirable way. And has never said, this should not have happened to me. She's never said that. She said, I was, you know, I did this.
She did make a statement earlier this year saying, now at age 44, I'm just beginning to consider the implications of the power differentials that were so vast between a president and a White House intern in the lens of the Me Too movement. But you're right. No, she never said anything other than I was a willing participant in this. So.
Yeah. What else?
To the French Open. It's a sad day. Serena Williams tried to play through the pain of an injured pectoral muscle, but
says she can't serve.
Couldn't serve. So she has had to withdraw, and this means that she did not get to face Maria Sharapova.
Who she owns.
She really does.
Liz, you've seen a bunch of those.
Reminds me of the Borg Garolitis. Who owned who? The famous Venus statement. Nobody beats Venus Carolina 17 times in a row. Yeah, so, I mean, rivalry is not what you'd call this.
It's because 19-2 and 15-0 lately.
But still, it's a captivating, you know, match that a lot of people would have wanted to see, even if the outcome was probably not
so,
in doubt.
So this is my question. I understand why Serena is unseeded. Because she hasn't played in such a long time because of the pregnancy. Sharapova was out for a while because she was a drug cheat.
Yes.
But she's only seeded 28th. I guess that really surprised me. Is she not the player she was?
Wait, I forget. Who's the she?
Sharapova. 28th.
I don't think she's had that good a run since she's come back from that, has she?
I don't think so. And I can't remember how long she's been clean?
Since the Meldonium.
Since Meldonium.
Meldonium free.
So what is this? What does this mean? Wimbledon is 3 weeks away.
It is.
What
I think
does it
that's
mean?
That's a big, big deal because Serena, well, anywhere Serena plays, particularly in the slam, she's a force. It doesn't matter her seeding, her ranking, you know, whatever is around her. It's, you know, a shoulder injury with the serve being such a big part of her game. I think she's having an MRI. I don't think the results of that are clear. I would think it'd be a stretch for her to come back because you just don't want to play with a shoulder injury. And every bit of tennis she plays, she should feel that she's at her top.
She's 36.
She's
ancient.
Phenomenal.
For women's tennis, for all tennis, 36 is ancient, and she's still the best player. But if she, I don't know that you heal as, you know, as Shaquille O'Neal famously said, 39 ain't 29, bro. I mean, at 36, it takes longer.
For sure,
heal.
It takes longer. And, you know, before the Meldonium, I'm probably butchering that
Meldonium,
word.
Meldonium, we love it. We eat it all the time.
Yeah. You know, it was a shoulder injury that took Sharapova out for a good while. And she had a surgery. So, you know, that's tough for any tennis
what
player.
What is women's tennis without Serena Williams? What is it exactly?
There's a big drop off.
Simona Halep.
Yes, she's the number one seed in advancing.
If you saw her on the street, you would not know who she was.
That's true.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
If you saw Sharapova or Serena, you'd know who they were.
Sharapova was just at a guest spot on that Showtime program, Billions, which was, I was like, wait a minute, Mary Sharapova in that. It's fantastic.
Is that right? Well, that's what Kelly O'Coin is on now,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. That's right. He plays Dollar Bill.
Tim.
Yes. Oh, it's a great show. And by the way, I should point out there's two American women who are in the quarterfinals, Madison Keys
I wouldn't know
and
her.
Sloane and Stephens.
And I wouldn't
that
know
is
her.
Very cool.
Sloane Stephens, who won the City Open here a couple of years
I would
back.
Not know them, but I know Serena Williams.
I've got one more final story for you.
Quickly.
One final story. How many oysters do you think you could eat in 8 minutes, Mr. Tony?
How are they prepared?
Just, you know.
Just for half shell?
Yeah,
raw?
Half shell.
20, 8 minutes?
20, 8 minutes.
20 and I'd stop.
How about...
If I got the 20.
How about 40 dozen?
No, ooh. I don't think I could do that.
That's over 300.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, was this done by a person or an animal?
Yes.
Like an elephant who just
it was the
them.
World eating, Oyster Eating Championship in New Orleans at the Oyster yeah. Festival, which is a
okay.
good place to have this.
Yeah.
Darren Breeden of Orange, Virginia won that. He won.
You know he should be invited to the White House.
He really should be. Him and Joey Chestnuts,
yeah,
right?
Winning.
Yeah. Winning. That's winning. Hashtag winning.
Second place. 27 dozen oysters.
Wow. So
that's Darren, a big spread.
Right, wow. Yeah.
That's
so he
50%
was,
spread. Right.
Yeah, that was...
Well,
that
how
was,
many minutes that was that? You said eight minutes?
8 minutes.
Are they... So are they do you have...
They just keep bringing out a dozen.
So you just throw them down.
Just throw them back.
Well, 5 dozen a minute.
They just
yeah.
slide right
and
down.
And that, by the way, second place...
5 dozen a minute.
That was Michelle Lesko. She was the defending champion. So this wasn't, you know, some passive
ball. Get out of here.
Third place, Adrian Morgan, 27 dozen oysters. And I just want to read through some of the contestants who did not
one
finish in the
second.
Medals. Mia Meatballs of Danvers, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Crazy Legs Conti of New York City. And Alex Moose Perez of Texas.
Fantastic.
So
hyphenated Moose Perez?
I think that's his actual middle name.
What is the prize?
Oysters. More of them. A bucket.
It really does.
A big bucket.
Glory.
I think just bragging rights, you know, in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Tickets to the Bruce Show.
You're able to scream,
Broadway.
I am Spartacus. Let's get out of here. Old Guy Radio, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio. This is You've Got a Friend. This is this both James Taylor and Carole King, or just James Taylor?
This is just James Taylor. But they did play this together when they went on that tour recently.
Yes.
And she wrote this.
That recent tour that's very near and dear to my heart. Do you want to tell the people why, Michael?
I'm sorry, I'm missing this.
James Taylor and Carole King.
Oh. Because of the concert we went to?
Yes.
So Liz and I had been dating, and we made an agreement not to tell our parents. And we are at the concert with my parents, and I believe that's when you started to have an understanding there was a romantic relationship between the two of us.
Right. So I love the song anyway. In terms of critical commentary, I simply love the song. I think it's a great song. And
it
every
is a
time
great
I
song.
Hear beautiful. It, it makes me feel wistful, which is a word that we don't use enough in the English language. Wistful. It's a beautiful song.
This song was released on this day in 1971. Carole King, and you love when she talks about how she wrote this. Mm. She said the song was...
Let
as,
me guess.
It was as close
just came
to,
out of me. I was at the piano. Just came out of me in 10 minutes.
The song was as close to pure inspiration as I've ever experienced. The song wrote itself. It was written by something outside myself through me in roughly 5 minutes. And according to Taylor...
Notes King, on a napkin.
King told him that the song was a response to a line in Taylor's song Fire and Rain that said, I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend.
Yes.
And that was sort of...
How
for that.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. The Nats are back in action tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays. We root for the Nats here, but Michael...
Well, I have a new AL team.
Yes. The official American League team of many of the people on this show is now the Tampa Bay Rays because of their third base coach, Matt Cotraro, who was here, who listens to the show.
Yes.
Who listens to the show,
it's
who
great
lives...
meeting him.
He's from Albany.
On his day off, he came to see this show being done, and he brought a couple of Rays T-shirts.
Which I haven't seen.
Yeah,
which
here.
I'd like to see. So I feel really good about that. Although the Rays are, they're in a terribly, terribly hard division. And
the third place, so they're only like a game or two under 500.
And they lost their best player last year. Evan Longoria left, right, to go to the Giants?
Yes. But Chris Archer still pitches for them. He's quite good. And I love meeting him because he knows that I'm a Red Sox fan.
Yes.
But, you know, we bonded over a lot of things, including the fact that he's a big Grateful Dead fan. So we,
But he wasn't at that show.
He was not, but he was telling me about a show he wants to go to when they're in New York playing the Yankees. So
and we just kept pestering him about in-game decision making.
Yeah, he just wanted to talk
about anything other than baseball.
So yeah, I want. Yeah, like dead. Why do you send him? And he says, you know, if the guy scores, I never get any credit. If he's thrown out, I get crushed.
Yes.
So it was very nice to see him. We enjoyed his company very much. And when they don't play the Nats, we're going to root for the Rays here. I haven't had the chance to do this because I haven't seen Liz publicly or on air since I went to the Bruce Springsteen show.
Yes, and I listened to you talk about it.
And I told you I cried a number of times at that show, which I think everybody does. Everybody who I've talked to who has gone to that feels the exact same way about it and how wonderful it is. And in my case, as I said many times, I just... The beginning of the show, when he talks about when he knew he wanted to be a rock and roll star and what he did to be one, it was just great. That sort of direction, that obsession, you know, that was great.
Yes. I mean, everyone at 6 or 7 or 8, I think absolutely everyone has a clear vision of what they're going to be, whether it's, you know, an astronaut or an actress or, you know, a dinosaur hunter or, you know, just fantastic things.
And you're one of those outliers who followed through.
I mean, the story you told about trying to learn all the words in the dictionary, I really loved. But man, woman, Bruce fan, nominal Bruce fan, everyone I've spoken to who's seen it, it always goes to tears, and the tears just come.
Yes.
And it doesn't fit any category. It's certainly not a concert, yet it's not a play. It's one man's telling you his coming of age. Yet, to me, it immediately went through my heart like a boomerang. You know, it became all these triggers for my childhood and how I used to look at my mom or how I used to relate to my dad. And the tears come, you know, really because of your own experience. Although you're watching this man be very raw. And the fact that he's Bruce Springsteen and has this appendage of the E Street Band out there, that just falls away. That's completely incidental.
So we were talking. I mean, when you mentioned that you go to this show, everybody understands that it's pricey. It's hard to get tickets and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And the discussion always ends up with Hamilton, which was pricey. And is it,
sure.
Hamilton was this sort of runaway cultural phenomenon with the original cast more than any other thing I've ever heard of. The amount of young people, you know, 14, 15, 16, who memorized the show and wanted to see the show. So the original cast, and I was fortunate enough to see that, those tickets were very expensive. I know people, I work with people who spent as much as $2,000 on a ticket. And it's even very pricey now, although there are some tickets for $10. Most of the time you're going to pay a lot more
than that.
Still
$500.
Yeah, and so I always say this. Hamilton, in one form or another, is going to be around for the next 20 to 30 years. There are going to be productions of Hamilton. Now, are they going to be as good as the original? Maybe better. Maybe not as good, maybe better. Because an entire generation of kids is going to grow up saying, I want to play that part. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be great. Mm-hmm. They're really going to be great. This thing, Springsteen, this is it. This is it.
Yes.
So if you're picking where to spend your money, if you have that opportunity, it's not going to happen again in 5 years. And if somebody else does this show, he's not going to actually be Bruce Springsteen. So for me, that choice,
Nick
Springsteen.
That's a great point. But I mean, that to me is the beauty of live theater. And that's why, I mean, I don't live an extravagant lifestyle, but I never begrudge money I spend on live theater or concerts.
Have you been to the Bruce show multiple times or no?
No. So, and that's a real departure for me because,
that's what I asked. And I know Tony said that some of the people around him had been there.
Well, the guy next to me had been there six times, and a woman two seats from me had been there five times.
I know a lot of people who've been a lot.
I'm not trying to, I don't say this antagonistically, but I don't understand why you would do that
music. And I fear that I'm taking over the show here.
No, it's your
show.
So
the moment, the moment it came to an end, you know, and you, it was very clear to me, I don't need to see this again.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I felt, so incredibly privileged and fortunate to be there. And the theater seats 980 some. So it's a very confined space. At that point, he hadn't extended the run 2 and 3 times as he's done. So, I mean, this sounds treacly, but it's I had two trains of thought, and they're both sincere. One was that I wanted so many people to see this, and I knew so many who got shut out. I just thought I should not take up a place twice when other people could go, because it was so finite, to Tony's point, even more finite in my mind than it would become. But then also, I was just so wrung out. I mean, really, I went, somebody told me bring Kleenexes, so I had, but I had gone through them like 20 minutes into the thing. I was so emotionally wrung out. I just thought, I can't really go through this again. And it was just a beautiful thing. But now that time has passed, I am plotting a return. So I think I'm going to go in October when my birthday falls.
Oh, cool.
For a second time. But that's a gracious plenty.
Good for you. There were two things I wanted to talk about, and one I won't because it's going to take too long. And that is The Americans. I've finished. I watched. I've caught up.
I've had an email exchange
with the producer and the creator, Joe Weisberg. So, I mean, about what I thought about it.
I may have a new TV.
He must have loved that.
Is it you're not talking because I talk too much?
No. I just want to know. Something happened last night that I thought was interesting in my house.
Oh.
Michael had come over with Liz. Michael, Liz, and Kate, and baby boy Bootsy. Boots. And Michael cooked, and everything was fine. And on the way out, right before they were going to go, we heard Kate took the baby outside in the backyard. Kate took the baby out in the backyard, and the wine tyrant, who always throws my dog out of my house, she constantly just opens the door and says, "This is where dogs belong."
No,
dogs.
Chessie in particular likes being outside. And you just don't want her outside because you don't want to buy new sod because you let her run up and down the fence.
It's just, she runs the fence. She rips up the sod. It costs like $3,000 every single year.
She's a dog.
I understand she's a dog. But I play the Frisbee game with her. This is far too complicated. In any case, Kate is out there with baby boy. And Chessie is out there. And we hear Kate go, "Oh, no." Right?
Everything you want to hear as a father is you're cleaning up. And you know it's muddy. And she's running around with the dog with your kid in her arms.
So what you think, the first thing you think of in an oh no like that is
a deer eating Bootsy.
The baby has fallen down, the dog has eaten the baby. The dingo ate my bitey. That's what you thought. Anyway, so it turns out to be much different than that. It turns out that Chessie has trapped and caught a bird.
Okay.
Oh.
Chessie has caught a bird. Now you got a beagle. Beagles are dogs that do
hunters.
This.
Yes.
Beagles go for birds.
Yes.
My dog got a rabbit some months back, but had not gotten a bird, to my knowledge, had not gotten a bird. Now, she's out in the backyard, and she is prancing around with this bird. She no longer shaking the bird because she's killed the bird.
Right.
And it's this grayish thing in her mouth, and I'm trying to get her to give me back, just to drop the bird. So I take the Frisbees out. Michael, explain the Frisbee game.
The Frisbee game is Dad gives her...
Hang on, slow down. I'm going to try to follow you. Okay, go ahead.
The Frisbee game, Dad just has 5 Frisbees, and he throws all of them at the dog. The dog then has 5 Frisbees in her mouth and just runs away from him. That's not the Frisbee game that we designed for him to play with the dog. We wanted to have the dog bring the Frisbee back, so you try and train with 2. Chessie drops one.
Right.
As she drops one, you have her sit, and then you throw the other one, so she has disengaged, and she's going to then learn how to bring the Frisbee back and forth.
We have a
little
different
game
version
that's
of the game.
Fetch.
Yeah, we have a different version of the game.
Version, yeah.
I just throw hard Frisbees, and she
in
goes
in all
and gets
directions,
them.
And then you let her bring the Frisbees into the house,
and they're disgusting. Yes, and I let her do that. So I started throwing
this is
Frisbees.
An undisciplined game.
I started throwing Frisbees, hoping that she'd have to drop the bird to get the Frisbee in her mouth.
But
she did not. And in fact, what happened was she ate the bird. The only thing that was left in various spots in the yard were feathers.
Ugh.
She ate the head, she ate the body, she ate the feet.
Tastes like chicken.
She ate it.
Save the bones.
For Henry Jones, because Henry don't eat no meat. So, I, like most of the night, I wondered when she was going
when
to eat
when it's coming back.
Yeah. How she was going to get rid of the bird that she'd... Does Jack eat birds?
No. Okay, so
does Jack put them at your feet?
He's a pescatarian,
No. Jack, I'm so ashamed to admit this because I have a statue of Saint Francis in my backyard. I'm not Catholic, but he is my favorite saint.
Okay.
So
that was Drew Brees.
No, and so it grieves me that Jack has caught a bird because I feel
that to the animal kingdom.
I'm inviting all the animals in as if my backyard is St. Francis's, and I have a beagle.
This is what they do. This is the cycle of life.
He has trapped a bird, and I hate to tell the story on Jack. He just made it so it couldn't fly again. Oh. I mean, it was
ripped
just,
its wings off.
No, he didn't rip it. I think he just broke it.
Right?
And he didn't eat it. He didn't kill it. But
who's that?
He was just playing with it.
Yeah, somebody's phone. Go ahead.
There we go.
Yeah. So I don't have a bell on his collar, but I never let him out of the backyard without banging on the door. I make a lot of ruckus.
So they can scram.
So that everybody, and see, we also have a bunny that comes back in our backyard.
We had one.
Jesse got that one. No, Jack just sees rabbits and birds, I think, as like squeaky toys.
Yeah,
if he got them, he would shake them.
Yeah.
And try to get the squeaker out.
Yeah.
Like he does his squeaky toys. But he would not eat them.
Jesse
went the distance.
Yeah.
Jesse can get the trifecta with a squirrel, right?
She's
bunny bird squirrel?
She doesn't seem like, actually, and prior to this, she didn't seem to care about birds.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe the bird said something.
Yeah, we don't know what we said between the two.
No, she was not hungry. And so she's a big dog. She was not. No, she
this
got
dog
there.
Is overfed. She gets treats.
I think she's too fat. I think she's about 75 now.
Is the concern that now she wants to move up a weight division?
Yeah,
then, maybe take on moose or deer or something like that.
Yeah. So she ate the bird, and other than the feathers. Carol's out there with a bag. I'm going, what are you not putting? There's nothing left. There's nothing left.
No memorial service.
No, it's gone. So, but
But you know what? Could I just say one other thing?
Sure.
I think this is the time when birds are hatching, little baby birds. And so I think the bird in question could have been a bird that was trying to learn to fly that wasn't able to do it and was just sort of sitting there in the yard.
So it's the Bootsy of birds.
I have no idea.
Chessie plucked it from the sky, but it's a vulnerable time for baby birds.
It could have been part of a peacekeeping mission. He just wanted to have a détente with the dog.
So many things I was going to mention all the gifts.
I
guess I'll do it tomorrow. No, this was great. I will take a break. We'll have email and a jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
The man between the pipes and DC's goalie.
This is great.
Unbeknownst to avid Caps fan Tony. Sheehan tells you since Greenberg is dead. Kill me. That runs through your head when you Tony, off to their best start because of Holtby as the goalie. Would you know him from a homeless man?
It's just great. Sean Marcy.
Becky, Carly, Jim, or Ozzy, yes, and Trotsy. Don't you love how hockey dudes use nicknames? Surely, Tony, tell us what numbers they wear.
You can do eight. Eight is the only one.
Never 70. Get beyond the second.
No, they're done. We're done. That era is done. That.
You don't think there's one chance, one three-game chance to earn the medal back here?
It would be the worst ever. That's a great song by Sean.
That's true.
Let me thank Barry's Verluga for coming on the show today. Let me thank our sponsors, ZipRecruiter and Harry's Razors. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. From John Carey in Bowling Green, Kentucky, I couldn't agree more with your comments on the general level of coarseness in the culture. Just this weekend, I heard a baseball play-by-play guy describe a sacrifice as a feckless bunt. Hashtag sad. From Ed Butt, Gary is absolutely right. A Stanley Cup victory for the Caps would be a big boost to the popularity of hockey among really young D.C. people, you know, like those less than halfway to manhood. Led by Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita, the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 1961. It was their first cup since the 1930s. The next year, my high school started a four-team intramural hockey league. Although I could barely stand up on my figure skates, I played on a team. I've been a big hockey fan ever since, so much so that I rarely change the channel when you start talking about it on air. Brendan in Seattle, on yesterday's mailbag on the 4th of June, you read an email from Dennis Bounds in Seattle. All the littles in Seattle, like myself, must be wondering if it's that Dennis Bounds, the former longtime anchor of the evening news on local NBC Channel 5 affiliate. Nigel, can we get the I-team on this straight away? Can you find out if that's,
we'll find out.
That's right? Yeah. From Neil in Rockville. Last night I was attending a fundraiser for the DC Grays, the official wooden bat summer college team of the Tony Kornheiser Show. I decided to sit down at a small table with Andy Poley and two other gentlemen. Andy made introductions, and lo and behold, I found myself sitting next to and spending the next hour or so talking with the one and only Neville. For a little like myself, it was a wonderful experience getting some real inside baseball knowledge. Neville is the shadow president. Right. I mean, that's what Neville is. Yeah. Neville's everywhere.
Too. Very loose lips.
Ran into Neville at the Social Safeway on Sunday.
Neville is everywhere. By the way, if there is a Game 6, I think the socialite should scream, go Caps.
Absolutely.
Joe Caronia in Kansas City, Missouri. I am to enclosed spaces are to flying. I need an MRI to confirm that I had a torn meniscus. I do. The anxiety meds were not kicking in fast enough as I was being positioned on the table. As a longtime listener, I knew just what to do. I started counting. Because I'm only a junior college graduate, I could only count by fives. But I got through it. Thank you for your help in my time of need. And do I copay? What does that mean? What does copay mean?
Pay, like your insurance.
Yeah, insurance.
Yeah, it's like a fixed
No, you don't have to pay me.
Yeah.
Bill LaHecca, co-host New York. I was thinking about this last night. I think you're guaranteed that the Caps will win the cup, will go down in the annals of sports history as the greatest guarantee ever. Whenever we think of guarantees, we'll think of legends like Messier, Namath, Paul, the psychic octopus, Kornheiser. You're an elite class of prognosticators. Perhaps you should go on top. Just a thought. You're truly a kingmaker. From Les Kernan in Rochester, New York. So if we follow Sanzi's logic, does MLB end the season with the World Series? Come on, man. I'll shut up and listen. From Amy Burns, I closed my dry cleaning store in McLean last year, 67 years the same location. Bob Ryan, the weatherman, was a customer, and we handled the makeup on collars this way. We dry cleaned the shirt for the oil-based makeup, then laundered the shirt. Your dry cleaner may not want to do that, so I would recommend you use a product called Stain Stick. When you take the shirt off, it goes on dry. It doesn't have to be washed right away because it is not wet. It will keep the pigment in the makeup from, in effect, dyeing your shirt after the washing removes the oil base in the makeup. Good luck, Amy Burns.
Wow.
That's a home
run
right there.
For life. Yeah. Sam Angel in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, from the Drexel SID, right? Yeah. The Caps have found a way to exercise so many of their demons over the last 6 weeks. They lost the first two playoff games at home and won. They played the Penguins and won. They faced a Game 7 on the road and won. Now they are up against the greatest adversity there is, a Washington Capitals 3-1 lead. May God have mercy on all of our souls. P.S. If the Caps win their first cup in Las Vegas and Super G is there to see it, will we ever see him again?
50-50.
Eric Carlson, West Lafayette, Indiana. The Rock, the Redders started chanting, "We want the cup," late in the third. Tell me, have you ever seen this team blow 3-1? Seriously. All the emails.
Five times, I think.
White Kaiser, who's Marty's son. I'm with Steve Sands. It just feels like the Caps have to win the cup before the Nats can win the World Series and AU can win a first-round NCAA tournament game. He's from AU Class of 2004. Love Steve on Monday's show. As a former resident of the Albemarle and Brandywine apartment buildings while at AU and soon after, Calvert Woodley was my go-to. I'm still very partial to it. All the littles love screaming La Cheeserie, but I always have a special place in my heart or liver for the Calvert Woodley discount liquor bin. and their great prices on Macro Brew 30 racks that got me through senior year in college and the first couple of years out of college. The discount sale liquor bin does usually not feature Blue Label, but is worth a look for other decent bottles. Tell Lace that Malibu does make a regular appearance in the bin, but I guess shouting discount liquor bin doesn't have the same ring to it. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
And boom goes the dynamite.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Can get enough. That's what she said. Sometimes I think it's got too big, like there's no more room at all. When you give your love, I'm not sure where to put it. Guess I'll have to be flexible. That's what she said. She said
over and over again.
That's what she said.
Dude, I'm serious. She totally did.
That's what she said.